You've been listening to Puccini's Tutto Amore, conducted by James Levine, sung by Montserrat Caballé and Placido Domingo from the Metropolitan Opera Gala honoring Sir Rudolph Bing album. It's a minute past 10, and this has been Valerie Jean here at WUSB Stony Brook, Long Island's first station of the 90s. Stay tuned now for Stardate, and following that, Eric will be here for Brain Damage here at 90.1.
Stardate August 18th. On today's date, more than 100 years ago, two astronomers working in different parts of the world independently discovered helium. Helium, the same stuff that makes balloons float in the air, is a very common element in our universe. And yet it was found relatively late in the process of discovering and naming the chemical elements. What's more, it wasn't discovered on Earth. It was found first on the sun. On August 18, 1868, Norman Lockyer in England and Pierre Janssen in India both observed a total eclipse of the sun. Both were using a spectroscope which split sunlight into its component colors and which had been used previously to find the element hydrogen in the sun. This time, both Lockyer and Janssen noticed spectral lines corresponding to a new and unknown chemical element. It was later named helium, for the Greek helios, or sun. This was the first time an element was discovered in space instead of on the surface of Earth, where helium wasn't found until the year 1891. Helium is the second most abundant element on the sun, and in the universe as a whole. The sun is about three-quarters hydrogen and about one-fifth helium. The sun and most stars are made primarily from hydrogen and helium. These two elements are believed to have formed in the Big Bang, the event thought by most astronomers to mark the birth of our universe. This is Stardate. Our writer and producer is Deborah Bird. For a copy of our Stardate magazine, send your name and address and $1 to cover postage and handling to the University of Texas McDonald Observatory, Austin, Texas, zip 78712. And please give us the name of your Stardate station. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
And it's 3 minutes after 10 on a Saturday, in case you didn't know.
Just the area code you called. Haven't we been through this before? Oh, I don't know where these people come from, but I'm just trying to settle in here after being away for, what is it? 5 weeks? 4 weeks? I don't know. Good evening, everyone. It's Brain Damage, and I'm Eric Corley back again from being out in California. And you've seen nothing. You've seen nothing, folks. Nothing at all. Not one little itty-bitty thing until you've seen the Rocky Horror Picture Show in Berkeley. That's all I have to say, with a cast of characters you just would not believe running up and down the stage and accosting you and making you do things that you ordinarily would not do. Well, enough said about that, but Rocky Horror Picture Show, yes, it used to be magic around here, I remember, back in the good old days. It used to be every week it would play somewhere out here, and not anymore. Now you got to go into New York City, and it's just not the same. But in Berkeley it is, but it's different. If you catch my drift. Anyway, good to see everything is pretty much in one piece around here. Around here, meaning Long Island, not other parts of the world. Things are rather strange in other parts of the world. And I think maybe we'll get right into that with our friends from Moscow, who've been waiting to tell you their opinions of things for weeks now. But, of course, we haven't had the opportunity to give you that. We've also got tripods. We've got a new song by some former Big Audio Dynamite people. Of course, we'll be taking your phone calls. And we've also got a report from Berlin on the wall, you know, the Pink Floyd wall. But first, before we do anything else, let's tell you the weather forecast, because we know that's what concerns most people around here. 24 degrees Celsius, and that comes out to be 75 on the Fahrenheit scale. We're expecting it to become cloudy with a 40% chance of showers or a thunderstorm, lows in the low 70s. And for tomorrow, Sunday, considerable cloudiness, cooler with a 40% chance of light rain, becoming breezy with increasing winds, torrential downpours, death, destruction. Oh, no, that's next week. Sorry. No, tomorrow night, cloudy and breezy with a 40% chance of rain in the evening. Enough with this chance of rain. Let's just do it, for God's sake. Monday, mostly cloudy and cool, highs in the mid-70s. I got to tell you something about weather in California. You know, weather in California is bizarre because it never seems to change. You know, you go to the Bay Area, you go to San Francisco, Oakland, Berkeley, and it does change. You know, you walk from one block to another, and it's blue sky on one block, and it's cloudy, and it looks really ominous, and then it's chilly, and then it's hot. But nothing ever really happens. You know, it just keeps threatening to do something. You know, the sky looks like it's at the end of the world, but never a drop of rain falls down. It's kind of sad. And then you go to the rest of California, and it's 110 degrees everywhere you go. And it never rains. And the sky is always blue. But the weirdest thing about it all, you have to wonder, what do the weathermen talk about on television? I mean, if the weather never changes and it's like this almost all year round with slight temperature variations and no rain ever, what do they talk about? They give them twice as much time on TV, and I don't know what they talk about. They simply pass around numbers. They tell you what the temperature in Death Valley is and the temperature in San Diego, and they compare the two and draw up ratios and a little chart and diagrams and all kinds of factual information like that. But it really doesn't mean a thing, because the weather is always the same. And that's what drives me nuts, is that people move out there. They go to California, they go to Arizona and Nevada and those kind of places, because the weather is so much nicer, you know, and the weather is better for them. And I just can't imagine how something that is always the same can be good for you, you know? Don't you need differences? Don't you need variety? Don't you need some bad to compare so that you can say something is good? I mean, if it's good all the time, then it's not good anymore. It's just the same. And it ceases to be a factor. So I had some very basic difficulties with life in California. The weather was one of them. It wasn't that major a deal. I mean, I didn't get as upset as I am now. I'm just thinking about it and getting kind of upset. But it's something to think about. Be glad. Be glad that you have weather in this area that does things to you that sometimes you don't like having done to you. You know, like hurricanes, for instance. I was reading in newspapers about hurricanes that were forming and heading up this way, and I was just so distraught, thinking that maybe a hurricane or a tropical storm was going to hit Long Island, and I was going to miss it. That was the worst feeling I had. Fortunately, thank God it did not happen, but I'm back now, and I'm ready. I hope you are, too. Speaking of hurricanes, let's go right to Radio Moscow.
Radio Moscow presents a Soviet mass media review. In this edition, a meeting in Irkutsk between the Soviet foreign minister and the American Secretary of State, a Soviet journalist on the conflict between Iraq and Kuwait, the Soviet Union and Albania restored diplomatic relations, and the problems of perestroika. The international situation can no longer be described in terms of East-West rivalry. The Soviet Foreign Minister Eduard Shevardnadze and the U.S. Secretary of State James Baker drew that conclusion at their meeting last week in Irkutsk. In a commentary on the meeting, the Daily Trude saw a high degree of understanding in the formal joint statement that the two nations do not view each other as adversaries in Asia or any other part of the world. From rivalry, they have turned to partnership.
The paper singles out a statement by Secretary Baker suggesting that he sees no obstacle to political cooperation between his country and the Soviet Union in any region. Hearing that from a prominent member of the U.S. administration would have been impossible just a few years ago. The paper points out that this time the discussion of regional problems was virtually free of any confrontation. The Americans did not try to snub the Soviet team or win the argument at any cost, as they sometimes did in the past.
The paper says that there are signs of compromise. That goes for the discussion of the painful Afghan issue, which had been expected to produce a sensation.
But no sensation followed. The Soviet and American diplomats tried to move closer on an Afghan settlement. It would appear, Trude concludes, that after Irkutsk, good progress could be achieved in that direction in the near future.
A Radio Moscow commentator pointed to further headway on the planned 50% reduction of the two nations' strategic offensive arms. Another obstacle has been removed here.
Eduard Shevardnadze told a news conference that the Soviet Union would end the production of mobile railroad-based missiles as of January 1, 1991. Even before this date, no such missiles will be placed on ready duty, he said. The ministers agreed to send appropriate instructions to their delegations drafting a strategic arms treaty in Geneva. The treaty is to be signed at the next Soviet-American summit.
The daily Selskaya Zhizn noted that for the first time the two sides discussed the whole specter of Asian and Far East problems, including security, stability, and ways to remove the persisting military confrontation.
The sides, says the paper, have agreed that their cooperation in Asia can and must be as fruitful as it had been in Europe.
The Izvestia daily saw a major outcome of the talks in the fact that the next session was set for September 12th and 13th. On September 12th, the foreign ministers of the six parties to the German reunion talks will be meeting in Moscow. After this, the U.S. Secretary of State will stay in the USSR for one more day to meet his Soviet counterpart.
The paper stresses that this would not be a routine session. Secretary Baker plans to take along a big team of economists and businessmen to sign a series of important contracts.
Thank you.
the joint statement by the Soviet Union and the United States denouncing the Iraqi invasion of Kuwait and demanding restoration of its independence has been described as unprecedented by the Soviet press. Observers pointed out that Moscow suspended arms shipments to Iraq. Radio Moscow's Yuri Soltan said the following.
There is no safe prediction as to the further developments in the Middle East. There is an encouraging trend, however. The times when parties to local conflicts could play on a rivalry between Moscow and Washington seems to be ending. The two great powers are pooling efforts in diffusing such conflicts.
Vladimir Mikhailov of the daily Rabochaya Tribuna voiced confidence that the invasion was prearranged.
He quoted a Western journalist recalling the past OPEC conference in Geneva. Then Iraq accused Kuwait of exceeding oil extraction quotas and playing down the oil prices, demanded $2.4 billion in compensation. The Western author said Baghdad simply refused to pay the bills. Throughout the war with Iran, it was receiving financial and other aid from Arab states. As a result, its foreign debt hit $30 billion, nearly one-half the sum supposedly owed to Kuwait. Was the invasion a way of repaying the debt?
Sovetskaya Russia has featured an interview with the Kuwaiti ambassador in Moscow, Abdulmohsin Yusuf Aldwej, who had this to say.
The present Iraqi leader claims the role of Arab world leader and is trying to win it with the help of military force. We demand withdrawal of Iraqi troops from our territory and a return to common sense. If someone has too much military power, he had better help the deprived Arab people of Palestine. For many years, the Arab leaders tried to convince the world that the Arabs are a civilized nation. What we are seeing in Kuwait breaks the image that we have projected in East and West, in Europe and in Africa. How can the world view Arabs as civilized people if the most powerful Arab army behaves in this way? And why make false allegations that there is some other government in Kuwait which Iraq wants to help?
Abdulmohsin Yusuf Aldwej, the Kuwaiti ambassador in Moscow. Rabochaya Tribuna deplored the tragic events, but said that they prove that the world has changed.
The quick and unanimous condemnation by the world community of the use of force in an international dispute has shown it wants to think and live in a new way, and this gives hopes for the future.
After nearly 30 years of alienation, the Soviet Union and Albania have restored diplomatic relations. The decision was welcomed by the Soviet media. Sovetskaya Russia wrote the following.
The move was made possible by the recent major changes in the world and especially in Europe. Also, Moscow and Tirana decided to resume the dialogue, broken off in 1961 for ideological reasons. Luckily, the two nations will not have to begin from scratch. They have a long-standing tradition of friendship. Albanians still operate some enterprises which the Soviet Union helped build in the 50s.
Speaking at a briefing in Moscow, a Soviet Foreign Ministry spokesman, Yuri Gromyski, pointed to the importance of the normalization.
Мы выражаем удовлетворение достигнутой договоренностью. Она отвечает духу времени, общей направленности процессов, происходящих в Европе.
We are satisfied with the agreement, for it conforms to the spirit of our times and is in line with the overall European process. Further Soviet-Albanian ties will benefit both sides. At the moment, they must restore the fabric of their relations and political dialogue and trust, and settle their contentions in a comradely manner.
Sovetskaya Russia took this view.
Albania's wish to end a long period of self-imposed isolation confirms its decision to join in the Helsinki process, so far as an observer. The involvement of the last missing partner in the European integration will certainly add new elements to the process.
A well-known Soviet journalist, Denislav Kondrashov, has said on Radio Moscow that thinking about the unthinkable is becoming routine in international politics as events take place that would be hard to imagine a few years ago.
Суть их заключается в том, что практически кончилась конфронтация военная и почти политическая.
The current developments indicate that military confrontation between NATO and the Warsaw Treaty Organization has virtually ended, and their political confrontation is about to end. By pursuing foreign policies based on the new thinking, the Soviet Union ended its ideological confrontation with the West, which led to the end of the Cold War. Guided by common sense, Moscow made a free choice a principle of its relations with the East European partners. All this led to the fall of authoritarian regimes and a speedy German reunion. The European political picture has changed a great deal. A continental security system is being built on new principles. Obviously, the Warsaw Treaty has lost its military role and has nothing but a conventional political role. That strips NATO of the main motive for existence in its present shape. With the war threat becoming remote, the economic factor is coming to the forefront.
According to Stanislav Kondrashov, the European summit to come in November in Paris is especially important here. After Helsinki, he says, this will be a new step toward a reunited Europe. You're listening to Soviet Mass Media Review prepared by Radio Moscow. The youth weekly Sobesednik has featured the returns of a recent survey of the Soviet Union's economic situation and made this comment.
The expectations of economic progress are on the decline. Almost a half of those polled expect no such progress this year. 47% believe this year would be on the whole worse than last year, and 46% believe that living standards will fall in the next 2 or 3 years. The paper attributes the gloom partly to social tensions in the country. Half-hearted attempts to pull it out of the crisis raise doubts as to the ability of the present state structures to produce radical solutions, says Sobesednik.
That feeling was shared by Andrei Sizov in the weekly Moscow News, and here's what he wrote.
Today, the Soviet food complex and its entire economy are in the balance, which has much in common with the so-called bread crisis of 1927 and 28. The harvesting problems show that agriculture is barely manageable. In the absence of a market, it has been plunged into chaos. Andrei Sizov warns that the Soviet Union could be forced to introduce ration cards for bread. He calls for a radical turn to a market as the only way of avoiding an economic crisis.
Radio Moscow has commented on the figures illustrating the Soviet Union's economic performance in the first 6 months of the year. They were published by the National Statistical Service.
At a recent meeting with journalists and economists, President Gorbachev noted that a switch to a market is always slow and painful. The cost of such a switch depends largely on the public attitude to it and the government's readiness to carry it out. President Gorbachev said the present government was able to carry out a radical economic reform. Many participants said they disagreed, but the Soviet leader repeatedly said that the government was strong enough to follow through with the planned reforms. The government's frankness in the assessment of the present hardships indicates strength, he said.
Radio Moscow's commentator said more economists in the Soviet Union see a way out in a drastic change in the attitude to property ownership. They urge for denationalizing property and bringing the owner and producer closer. This way has been chosen by the largest Soviet republic, the Russian Federation, according to Ruslan Hasbulatov, first deputy of the Russian President Boris Yeltsin. Here's what he told the Daily Zvestia.
Small factories and shops will be sold out to cooperatives and individuals. There are plans to attract foreign investments in the building of a dozen automobile assembly plants and plans to produce household appliances and other goods. These reforms will help put some life into the Russian economy. They are to start in the next 500 days.
And that was Soviet Mass Media Review, prepared at the studios of Radio Moscow.
Brain Damage is underwritten by a grant from the Little Computer Shop, located in the Model Shopping Mall in Centereach. Phone number 467-4352. The Little Computer Shop stocks the latest in hardware, software, and computer publications.
From rock to Bach, summer is the season for outdoor music, not only in America, but around the world. And perhaps most recently notable, where East and West have met in Berlin.
Hiya, friends. I hope you're having a nice summer. And while the summer here might be best remembered for the currency union between East and West and the formal end of border patrols, for a good quarter million who came to see Roger Waters' Wall concert at Potsdamer Platz, the site of the former Berlin Wall, the summer means musical history as well. but how would you describe it?
It's music theatre on a gigantic scale. It's huge. There's never been a show that's used tower cranes to move the set and scenery about. It's the biggest stage set ever constructed.
Well, it's not just the stage set that's big, but the lineup as well. From Roger Waters to Joni Mitchell, Sinead O'Connor, Van Morrison, Cyndi Lauper, and even a marching band of the combined Soviet forces in Germany. And though it costs $10 million to produce, the show's heart is in the right place, for its objective is to create a $1 billion fund for disaster relief. But all that aside, how does the show end?
The whole wall collapses in symbolic ruin.
Enjoy the show?
It was just incredible. I've never seen a show like it.
It was all right. Yeah, I don't really like this kind of music, but it was quite a spectacle.
How about you?
I enjoyed it. It's very good.
I thought it was technically very good, musically very disappointing.
Actually, it was great. It was really fantastic.
What did you think of the show, Tim?
I think it was one of the greatest things in the last time in Berlin. I think it was greater than the 9th of November.
Really?
Yes, I think so.
Well, if it wasn't for the 9th of November, there wouldn't be a show like this.
Yes, but the 9th of November was a problem of Berlin, of the Berliners, and now we were speaking about a world problem.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Thank you.
Reporting from Potsdamer Platz in Berlin, I'm Steve Merchinsky.
And I live in a New York City, city. When the man them this year's girl picking it, me turn around and brush them up properly, not their way.
Hi, this is Shelley Thunder, and when I'm in Stony Brook, I listen to WUSB. Show your support.
What about brain damage? What about brain damage? I thought you said you were going to... Oh. She was supposed to come in here and say she listens to Brain Damage on WUSB, but she's gone. Oh, well. This is Brain Damage, and it's WUSB, 10:34 in the evening. And we're getting ready here. We're getting the phones all set to accept your phone calls. But please, 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 please do not call now, because we've got the phones open and we're fixing them. And if you call now, you may electrocute one of our technicians. And I know you don't want to do that. The number not to call now is 632-6901, area code 516. Write it down. Call later. But for God's sake, if you have any decency in you, don't call now. I knew that would get the phones to ring. It's 24 degrees Celsius and 75 Fahrenheit. We've been through the weather. We're not going to do that again. What we are going to do is play a brand new song that just came in the mail from Mr. Don Letts yesterday. Oh, he sent it earlier in the week, but it just got here yesterday. And he sent it along specially so that you folks can listen to it first before anybody else hears it. It's from his new band called Screaming Target. So if you're at all into Big Audio Dynamite, I suggest you run and get your tape recorders now, because this is something you're probably not going to hear anywhere else. And while you're doing that, let's give a little promotion for the Tripods, who have been away for the last 5 weeks as well. By the way, I went to Big Bear City. Yes, I went to Big Bear City in California, which is right next door to Twin Peaks in California, by the way. Two very nice places, because while the rest of California is about 110 degrees, you suddenly go up this mountain and you're in Big Bear City, and it's in the 70s. You know, it's in the 70s, and everything is nice and crisp, and the trees are green, and the sky is blue, and I even saw some raindrops up there, and Twin Peaks is just down the road, a little tiny town with, I don't even think it has a traffic light. And the one thing, though, the one thing that particularly struck me about Big Bear City was the attitude of the people there. You know, I've thought about going to Big Bear City for many, many years now, ever since I first started listening to the Tripods. The Tripod family, of course, came to Long Island from Big Bear City, California, and that's where most of the production work for this mega series has sprung from. And so, you know, I expected to see kind of a nice neighborly kind of community, but instead what I found was, I don't know how you would put it nicely, but hostility. I think that's the theme of Big Bear City. Everybody seems to be very, very hostile and suspicious. And I just wonder, We heard some reports a few weeks ago of the family scandal that rocked the Tripod family. There must still be, even though that was many years ago, this must still be some remnants of that. From the gas station clerk to the hotel inspector to all these other people that we came across, they just seemed not very friendly, you know? They don't say thanks, and if you say thanks, they don't say you're welcome, and if you say hello, they just stare at you, and you listen to them as they're talking amongst themselves, and there seems to be this whole soap opera going on, you know? Well, I told Jill this, and if she can't figure that out, that's her problem. You know, and you just don't hear that kind of talk with other towns. You know, in other towns, people just generally seem to be friendly, and they don't let their the seamier side of life show as much as they do in Big Bear City. And gosh, you know, it was kind of shocking to me because I just sort of felt Big Bear City would be kind of like the second coming for me, but it wasn't, not at all. In any event, I don't want to go too crazy on that. There's no point crying over spilt milk, is there? What I will do, and we will be getting into the Screaming Target song in just a couple of seconds here, so get those tape recorders ready. What I will do, since the last episode of the Tripods was so long ago, about 5 weeks ago, we'll play the last few seconds of that, just to sort of catch you up, and then, coming up at 11 o'clock, we'll have this week's episode. And I believe everything leading up to the moments that we are going to hear, and it's only going to be a couple of seconds, too, was reports reaching Kathy Tripod at her suburban home that Howard may not, in fact, be lost at sea after all, but may have run off with the famous French actress Brigitte Leroux. And Kathy, as we see in this brief clip, has not taken the news very well at all.
You want to stay and have some chicken frankfurters with us, Uncle Jonathan?
Chicken frankfurters, huh? I must admit, it's been a long time since I've had some...
Charlie, do you know of any good lawyers around here?
Well, that depends, Kathy. There are so many different kinds. There's property, financing, corporate,
Charlie,
criminal...
I'm looking for a divorce lawyer.
And so the tripod... Well, that's pretty much where things stand as far as the tripods go. Yes, the family could be at the end of their existence for all intents and purposes. So tune in at 11 o'clock. We'll see how that particular saga is working out. Now, it's 10:39, and we're going to play a bit of the first Screaming Target release ever. Screaming Target consists of Don Leo and... I never remember his name. You know, the drum player. What's his name? Greg Williams, that's it. The three of them split off from Big Audio Dynamite and formed their own band called Screaming Target, and this song is their first 12-inch single. It's called Who Killed King Tubby? And I think you'll like it, because I liked it. And if you don't like it the first time, listen to it the second time, and I'll bet you'll like it even more. I'd like to know what you think, anyway. So this is Who Killed King Tubby? Just so your tape recorders work just fine, I'll leave you with 3 seconds of silence, and then we'll come back afterwards.
down the store. Down in J.A., Grammy don't pay. A gunshot has entered the glory. Big man shot for a rock to top. He's a good man, and what do we got? Let's spin round for the spy.
Is that a song or is that a song, huh? Who Killed King Tubby from Screaming Target here? Heard first on WUSB Stony Brook. I challenge anybody to find a radio station that played that before we did. And we've got two other songs, too, on the other side. We've got the Screaming Dub version of that, and we've also got Singing Lesson, which is kind of a neat song about how Don Lutz is convinced he doesn't know how to sing, but he does. And I think it's up to us to tell him that. Hopefully we'll be getting to that in just a little while. It's 10:46. Our phone number is 632-6901. Area code 516. My name's Eric Corley. The program is Brain Damage. I've been away for just over a month now, and it's always weird to come back. You know, it's always weird to walk into your house, walk into your neighborhood, walk into New York, and just sort of see how things have changed, just a little subtly, you know. The colors are a little different, the people look a little grungier, I guess is the word. Things just sort of change a little bit. You don't notice it when you're here, but when you go away for a while, it starts to register. You know, one thing, when you walk in the streets of California, and I had a lot of fun with this, there's some kind of a law, some kind of crazy law in California that says pedestrians have right of way. And what that means is, if you step out into the street, everyone has to stop and let you cross. I'm not kidding. That's not really, that's how it works out there. Now, it doesn't matter if the light is red. All you have to do is step out into the street, and everybody is obligated by law, and there's some kind of a law out there that tells people they must stop. And not only that, not only do they stop, but they don't get angry. They don't cuss, they don't scream, they don't make certain gestures that are universal in meaning. They just stop, and they wait, and they wait, and they wait for you to cross the street. It's bizarre. It's the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. And, you know, it got to the point where I just started walking out into the street without even thinking, knowing that, you know, everyone's going to stop, and that's all there was to it. I sort of had fun with it. But up to the point where I started driving myself, it got to be a bit of a pain, you know, always having to stop and wait for people to cross the street and wait for other people to cross after them. And, you know, you just sort of get impatient after a while. You can hardly wait to get back to a state where the car rules all, you know, and people sort of cringe in fear when you drive down the street. And, of course, the first thing that happened to me when I got off the bus that comes from the airport to New York, I almost got mowed down in the streets. Felt great. I knew I was back, you know. It means something. Oh, well, I'd like to hear anybody else's experiences they may have had, places they may have gone, things that they wonder if I did while I was away. I ventured into Mexico for a while, wandered around there, and I found that almost everything that people said about that place was completely false. Everyone said, you know, you drive in Mexico and the police are going to stage accidents and they're going to haul you off to jail and you're going to have to pay them a large sum of money to get out of jail. Everybody told me that. Everybody said, you know, if you go to Tijuana, you can count on being arrested and taken into jail and paying some sort of bribery to a policeman in order to get out again. And so, you know, I figured that's what was going to happen. I took a large sum of money with me so I would be prepared. And, you know, it was all set, waited on the corner, nothing happened, you know. Nobody arrested me. Everyone just sort of went about their business. And it was, you know, quite nice being in a foreign city so close to this country, but so different, you know, so completely different. Just the outlook on life, the way people live, and the mere realization that you're no longer in this place. You're in another place. You're in a third world country, you know, a place where the American way just is not the way anymore, where people live on these roads off in sandy desert climates. And it's quite something to live there. If you go there, you got to live there. You got to live there for at least a couple of days and experience it on your own and then come back and see the major differences. And Mexico, it's an easy country to fall in love with. It really is. You can see that by staying there. It's by talking with the people. You don't even have to speak the language. Just it's such a peaceful kind of a place. And we drove for about 2 days, and we didn't even make it halfway down Baja California, which gives you an indication of the size of the place. It's just incredibly huge. And then driving back to the United States of America in early August 1990, we were able to hear the old cry, "Get your filthy hands off my desert." And you just have to wonder to yourself, is this going to happen all over again? Our phone number is 632-6901, area code 516, and we're really going to take your phone calls next, so call.
Brezhnev took Afghanistan, Begin took Beirut. Galtieri took the Union Jack. And Maggie
over lunch one day, took a cruiser with old him, apparently to make him give it back.
Gathered at the cemetery.
town. All agreed with hand on heart to sheathe the sacrificial knives. But now she stands upon Southampton Dock with her handkerchief and her summer frock clings to her wet body in the rain. In quiet desperation, knuckles white upon the slippery reins, she bravely waves the boys goodbye again.
Sorry, folks, we just have to stop at some place. It's one of those Pink Floyd records that just goes on forever. But I think the statement has been made. It's a good record to play whenever military actions escalate around the world, and damn, military actions are escalating faster than you can say almost any word. It's 10:59 p.m., which means it's almost 11 o'clock. And time is sure flying here. It's flying very fast. It's tripod time. So, yeah, we have to sort of get back into tripod mode and do that. And I keep promising we're going to get to the phone calls. So make those phone calls come in, and we'll get to them all the faster. How's that? If I see five lines light up, 632-6901, we'll get to the phones right after the tripods. If, however, I fail to see five lines light up, well, almost anything could happen. I could just play Bobby Sherman songs or something for the next hour. I don't know. I can do anything I want. Just don't force me to. It's, okay, tell you what. Also, after the tripods, we're going to play one more song from Screaming Target. Yeah, a short song. This one is, it's called Tona MC, the singing lesson. It's kind of funny. So you might get a kick out of that. After that, though, I want to hear what people have to think of, have to say about this whole Mideast situation, because as usual, all hell breaks loose when I'm away, and I can't say anything about it over the radio. So there I was, stuck in Mexico, driving back to this country, and thinking to myself, listening to an American radio station out there, thinking to myself, oh God, what's going to happen this time? You know, what's the story here? And I want to hear from you folks what you think, you know, what your outlook is. But first, the tripods, then Screaming Target. And then we'll be back right after that. WUSB Stony Brook, Brain Damage here. Radio Free Long Island, in coordination with the Three Village Tobacco Farms, presents the exciting adventures of the Tripod Family, the story of one of America's most illustrious families and their struggle to find peace and happiness in the suburbs of Long Island. Today we rejoin Howard, who is trapped on a desert island somewhere in the Atlantic Ocean 2 weeks after we saw him last. And we hear, I don't think I can put up with this place any longer. I've been here 2 weeks already, and I'm going crazy. Boy, I'd do anything if I could only spot a plane.
Mr. Tripod!
Boater. Yes?
Well, which would you prefer for dinner? Smoked salmon or tuna fish?
Oh, I really don't know, Mrs. Baxter. Edna. I just want to go home to Long Island so I can see my family again.
Does that mean you haven't yet adapted to life on this desert island yet, Mr. Tripod?
Yes, I guess you could say that. And I don't plan on adjusting to life here, quite frankly. I just want to get out of here. No offense to you, Edna, or Harry over there. But, I mean, you two have been really nice, but I'm just going completely bonkers over here.
Oh, at least you're starting to fit in with the rest of us.
I just don't understand it. 2 weeks ago, my main concern was whether or not my family would be able to adjust to life on Long Island. Now I'm wondering if I'm ever going to see them again. And it's all because I wanted to star in that stupid film Uncle Jonathan was making on Whitney Island. I just don't know what to...
Excuse me, do you know where the nearest telephone is?
Of course not. We're on an island in the middle of nowhere. Do you honestly expect it to be Hey, just a minute. Who in the world are you?
Well, my name's Dave.
No, not that kind of who are you. I mean, who are you? Where did you come from?
Well, I was born in Raleigh, North Carolina.
No. How did you get on this island?
What island?
This uncharted island that we're all stranded on. Yeah, you've got to be the first person I've ever heard of who didn't know he was on an island. An uncharted one at that.
Well, I can't imagine how I got onto an island. I was just walking around the woods, and I got a little lost.
A little lost?
Yeah.
Mister, are you sure...
What you do here?
Are you sure you didn't hit your head or something?
Mr. Tripod, dinner's ready. Oh, who's that?
This, Mrs. Baxter, Edna, is a gentleman who thinks he's not stranded in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean.
What you do here?
He thinks he's still on land somewhere.
What you do here?
I am on land, dammit. You're the one who's flipped his lid, pal.
I thought I was going bananas. I thought Harry over there was completely nuts. but you're the craziest person I ever saw.
Well, would he like some dinner? Crazy people have to eat, too.
I don't know what he wants.
I'll tell you what I want. I want to wander back through those woods over here to civilization and get away from these lunatics here.
And just where do you think you'll end up if you go through there?
Exactly where I came from. Cape May in New Jersey.
Cape May, New Jersey?
Cape May, New Jersey?
What makes you think this is Cape May, New Jersey?
Well, what makes you think you're in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean?
Well, I was sailing around in it for 2 days, and these folks tell me that they've been over here 20 years. And if they've been here that long, I would think they would know where they are.
You know, Mr. Tripod, well, we never did explore these here woods over there.
What? What are you saying?
Well, you know, Harry and I just assumed that this was a desert island somewhere. I mean, we didn't want to leave, so we never bothered to find out for sure.
Are you saying that I've spent 2 valuable weeks of my life sitting on a beach in Cape May, New Jersey? And so a rather startling development seems to have taken place in the saga of Howard. Is he really in Cape May, New Jersey? You'll want to be with us next time when we'll hear Howard say, "By golly, you're right." That's next time on The Tripod Family, a presentation of Radio Free Long Island and the Three Village Tobacco Farms. This is Don Topeka.
pocketbook, press another piano. Shabba runs to hit the spot.
Let the money, let the money, let the money, let the money.
Stop the sweat, stop the worry, Susan, I am really sorry.
Drop a baby, drop a baby, drop a baby, drop a baby.
Booga, 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 booga.
Put the cross, the pink, the lip.
I put the jewelry down, I pull up the slip.
Put the cross, the pink, the lip.
My teeth and my grime, it's all never quit.
Now, you've heard two songs from Screaming Target, a brand new band out of London, featuring three former members of BAD. Don Letts leading this this venture here, and we just heard the singing lesson. And that's off a 12-inch. And maybe later we'll hear one other song, which is a sort of a dub version. Our phone number is 632-6901. We've only got two open lines, so give us a call now. And let me know what you think of this whole MIDI situation, because this is the first opportunity I've had to speak to radio listeners about it. Seems to be escalating faster than anybody can imagine, you know. And I remember a few weeks ago we were discussing this. We were talking about how the Soviets don't seem to be the threat anymore. What's going to happen? What's the military going to do? You know, is it going to go out of business or what? Are we going to have to find some other use for it? Or are we going to have to find new enemies? And I remember we sort of left it on the fact that there will be new enemies in the future, but who are they going to be? You know, well, now we know who they're going to be, and we've already spent $1.2 billion on this Iraqi venture. Incredible. What are your feelings? What are your thoughts? 632-6901. Good evening.
Hi.
How you doing?
How you doing?
All right.
So I just wanted to say about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Shows have been boring as hell.
Boring as hell, huh? Was that Touchtone a part of your comment or?
No. That was my friend. I'm sorry about that.
Okay.
What they did was they played like music that you trip out to, like weird music, and it was really boring. It wasn't even really a show. It was
maybe there were subliminal messages in there, like, you know, do it or something.
I don't know, but I turned it off. But uh-huh. I'm glad you're back.
Well, that's good to know. You've been following this whole MIDI situation?
You betcha. I've been watching CNN for the whole weekend and whatnot.
Uh-huh. Yeah, CNN is good to watch on occasions like this. I was sort of catching it in various places as I was traveling around. Are you within draft age, may I ask?
No, I'm not.
Are you?
I'm... next year I will be. I'm 17.
Oh, so you're not yet. Okay. So this must strike you as, something to really be concerned about.
You bet. I don't think there's going to be war, though.
You don't think? Why not?
I don't think the Iraqis are going to invade Saudi Arabia. For the simple reason is, what the heck was that?
Well, you're holding the phone up to the radio. You know, that's kind of
sound
you get when you do that.
But listen, if they were going to do this, don't you think it would make sense to do that? When the U.S. military...
Well, yeah, before we all start getting there, that's true. But, I mean, how is the situation going to possibly resolve itself, you know? I don't think we're leaving Saddam any room to back out, are we?
I think George Bush should have called for a meeting in the very beginning of this. But
do you ever wonder, though, why is it always us? Why isn't it, you know, all of them? I mean, why are we so concerned about this? Why are we always the ones that have to send the troops? I mean, shouldn't the Soviets be upset, too? Shouldn't the English? Shouldn't the French? Shouldn't they all be sort of, taking a frontline position here? Instead, it's the United States at war again with one of these countries.
Well, I agree with you. I don't think we should be the 911 number for all the countries that have crisis problems.
Uh-huh. I mean, yeah, it's going to affect things. It's going to make things a little rough on us. big deal. Things are rough on everybody all over the world. We have to, I think, act with a, you know, with all the other nations of the world. And there seems to be some unity. And the only thing that could foul that up is hot-headedness on our part.
But, I don't know. I think we should just blow them off the face of the earth. I really do.
Well, you know, that's one opinion, and a lot of people seem to like saying that, but, what would that solve, you know?
Well, a lot of problems. Saddam Hussein wouldn't be in power then.
Yeah, but look, I mean, 10 years ago we were saying let's blow Iran off the face of the earth, and look what happens. Now you're saying blow Iraq, and it'll be Afghanistan after that, and then who knows what, you know?
Yeah. Well, I don't know how. It's going to be very interesting to see what he does. But I don't know. What do you think?
I think, you know, we're going to see sort of a theme here. And the theme is that heavy-handed military action does not work. And that begins with Saddam invading Kuwait. And that it might end with us invading Iraq. And it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. You know, it's much better when you work things out as we've worked out the Cold War.
Yeah.
A lot more satisfying.
I also read that today that they're playing radio stations trying to bust the war. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Fuck you!
Good evening.
Good evening.
Yeah? Go ahead.
I just wanted to call and point out a few facts about the current situation that a lot of people don't seem to want to take very seriously, which is, I mean, we really are gambling with an escalation which could lead to a global war if the technological systems don't function as planned. I mean, if we, for example, people have myths about command and control of nuclear weapons, which we do have deployed out there to deter, quote-unquote, a chemical attack. And if we get into a battle situation, for example, today we all the ships in the Persian Gulf were brought to general quarters because of a shooting incident where we shot at an Iraqi tanker. And in a battle situation, when things start to get hot, the field commanders will ask the central command for release authority, which is something the president can grant, which essentially makes each field commander a superpower by giving him the authority to launch nuclear weapons. And in that kind of a situation, you could have a mistake. I mean, let's not forget the Stark incident, you know, where we were allied with Iraq and whoops.
Right.
They accidentally shot a missile at us. Or the Vincennes where, you know, we accidentally shot an Iranian airliner out of the sky, you know, whoops.
Uh-huh.
And if something like that happens in a situation where the military authorities are at a high state of alert and there's a lot of groupthink, the situation could escalate. For example, if there's an above-ground nuclear burst, we haven't had one like that in a long time because of the above-ground test ban treaty. All kinds of technological systems have not really been tested under real live electromagnetic pulse conditions.
Are you suggesting the United States will use nuclear weapons?
We have not ruled it out. I mean, this is something that was discussed, for example, between Peter Jennings and John McQuethie on ABC. And Jennings, you know, he says, John, you've been covering U.S. military tactics for a very long time. What do you think the U.S. response might be if the Iraqis were, to use my own words, crazy enough to use chemical weapons? And then McQuethie says, it's very difficult to tell, Peter, but within the possibilities are that the United States could strike very deep within Iraq with conventional weapons. They could hit Iraq with chemical weapons of our own, or it might draw a limited nuclear response from the United States. I'm very hesitant to say that. But that is definitely within the realm of possibility. If American forces are attacked en masse by chemical weapons, that is a part of the escalatory ladder on which the U.S. can get on. And then Jennings says, now you say within the realm of possibility and you say escalatory ladder. Do you mean to say that a nuclear response to chemical weapons is actually an option considered by the U.S. military? And McQuethie says it has to be an option. If our forces are going to be confronted with something like that, it is part of the options that are available to the U.S. military. And
so we're deliberately setting it up that way to, you know, deter Saddam Hussein. But if we were to have an above-ground atomic burst, I mean, you could knock out communications and early warning systems in Russia, which is right there. The border with Russia is, you know, on the border with Turkey and on the border with Iran. And if you have an above-ground burst, lots of things could go wrong.
Well, and if we were to do something that stupid, that would certainly be what it would take to get other allies, on, you know, other people on Iraq's side, which right now Iraq doesn't have anybody on their side to speak of.
Right. That situation could change very rapidly. They've made clear that any attack by us would contingently initiate an attack by them on Israel. Israel has hydrogen bombs, which is something that was revealed to the world not long ago. And I'm sure they wouldn't hesitate to use them. And once that starts to happen, then Syria might be a little bit nervous, and Syria is backed by the Soviet Union and so forth and so on.
Uh-huh. Well, the fact, all these countries, Israel, Iraq, Syria, they're all hot-headed as hell, you know, and they don't hesitate to do anything irrational.
Well, this is, we're inheriting, we're now reaping the fruits of a policy, a national security policy, which started after World War II, and the fact of the importance of oil, all the oil money that pours into the Middle East isn't going to be any good to them if they don't spend it. And what they've been spending it on for the last 40 years, essentially, has been the best military technology that money can buy, because the currency of the postmodern age is the currency of power. And so now we're reaping the fruits of this. And it's unfortunate. And if we don't figure out very rapidly ways to reach acceptable, maybe imperfect, nonviolent solutions to these conflicts, then we're going to be in deep trouble. And right now the United States is doing everything it can to push the situation towards war.
It seems that way, but why? I can't understand why. It's like, well, we've got to figure out a use for the, you know, for the Defense Department here. Let's make sure nobody ever talks about cutting the budget again. Because I've heard talk of, well, if we hadn't cut this this critical fighter or something like that, we would be more prepared for this situation. And what rubbish! What incredible garbage that is! You know, they get trillions of dollars in support, and they say they, you know, they have to get even more to be prepared for every possible situation. What do you think is a peaceful way out of this? Is there a peaceful way out at this stage?
Yeah, I mean, there is absolutely a peaceful way out, and it can be summarized in two letters, UN.
Right.
The United States has undergone a unilateral policy by undergoing an embargo involving interdiction of ships at sea. That's an act of war. That's generally recognized as an act of war.
They haven't used the word blockade, I believe, because that would be an act of war, and they haven't used the word hostage because that would be an act of war.
Well,
let's cut the crap.
This is the Orwellian level we're getting into.
Right.
Now with television coverage the way it is, anytime you hear on a news program, for example, the references to the UN-sanctioned embargo, what you're hearing is a word game in which the true meaning and the true reality of the situation is being manipulated to essentially for propaganda purposes, because the United States resolution was made under Article 41. Article 41 provides for the use of economic sanctions, which means the member nations agree not to buy and sell with Iraq. Okay, that's under Article 41. They agreed to it, and we said, oh, what a great, you know, victory for the U.S. and the world that we all can agree to this. But then we said, okay, now we're going to stop ships at sea and enforce this. But that was not provided for by any UN resolution.
Mm-hmm.
Although they could have under Articles 42 and 43, which provide for embargo and the formation of an international force. They have not used those articles. I mean, we didn't send ships to, stop ships at sea when we had economic sanctions on South Africa. And we didn't do that for a reason, because the UN didn't agree to that.
So anytime you hear about a UN-sanctioned embargo, you know, watch out, because that's not, in fact, the situation.
Well, I mean, the government is very scared, obviously, of what Iraq can do if it gains control of Kuwaiti and Saudi oil fields. You know, they could control a vast majority of the oil production, and it could adversely affect our lives. But we're overlooking one very important fact here, and that's that that oil is on the other side of the world, and it's in Arab hands, and the Arabs have to figure out how to deal with all of it. It's not our oil until we buy it, period. And I think we have to, you know, have to keep that in mind. We moved into Panama to protect United States interests, quote unquote. We moved into Grenada for the same reason. Now, Iraq has said they've moved into Kuwait for Iraqi interests. And while I find all of those acts reprehensible, we have to sort of balance them out and say, well, you know, they sort of think the way we might have thought back when we invaded Panama, when we invaded Grenada. You know.
Well, listen, I mean,
everything can't always be in our interest, you know.
Well, I mean, I am of the opinion, which I, you know, base on our imperialist history since the end of World War II, when we, during the formation of the National Security State, that what we are witnessing right now is absolutely nothing less than the ultimate imperialist act. We have gone in and secured the oil fields. On the second day, the Arab League was meeting to try and achieve. On that day, and this came out in McNeil Lehrer, on that day, the U.S. administration leaked, quote-unquote, a report to the press which stated the long-term goal of our troops being in the Middle East. And number one on that list, I mean, it was a prioritized list. Number one was secure the oil fields. Number two on the list was to protect the Saudi government and get Iraq out of Kuwait.
Mm-hmm.
And number three, and this was not pointed out by the press to the American people, that the third long-term goal was the toppling of Saddam Hussein. Now, that was leaked on the day they were trying to reach a negotiated settlement. Okay, so we are not interested in diplomacy here. We are interested in making sure that everyone knows who's boss in the Middle East. We've annexed the Middle East and secured the oil fields, which is what we are truly worried about here.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of resentment against Kuwait in the Arab world because it's a small country, it's a very wealthy country, and there's a lot of a feeling that, well, why does this country have all these riches while the rest of the Arab world is living in squalor?
Well, the gap between the haves and the have-not in the Mideast is really cavernous. I mean, it's tremendously huge.
Right, and that's what's going to draw a lot of support for Saddam's actions. And I'm not supporting his actions. I don't think military action in a case like this is warranted at all. But a lot of Arabs are going to say, you know, this is a chance for the really poor people to have an opportunity.
In geopolitical terms, we have always been interested in a destabilized Mideast.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're cashing in on that policy. And the gamble that our leaders are making with all of our futures, they're gambling that we're going to be able to swagger in and, you know, show everybody who's boss by force, by brute force. And that's the gamble.
Well, you know, I'm really uncomfortable with that, and I'm sick of it, actually. I'm sick of always seeing our country doing this. I mean, yeah, it's going to be a real pain in the ass if Saddam stays in there and if he moves into Saudi Arabia as well, and it's going to be an affront to civilization. But the whole world's going to have to deal with that. I don't see why we always have to be the ones doing this and provoking action like this.
Well, let me just slip one plug in that there are some people who are meeting every day at the sundial, passing out statements from various groups on this and exchanging alternative views on this.
This is at Stony Brook.
At Stony Brook.
At the Sundial, that's next to the administration building, and what time?
At noon. And we've sort of dubbed ourselves the Stony Brook Emergency Action Committee. I've been there every day, and other people come by and pick up handouts. And all we're doing is we're trying to exchange alternative views on this that... I mean, it's real obvious that the bourgeois media are, you know,
playing this to the hilt. They're grooming us for war. We're being groomed for war. And well, it's they remember Vietnam, and that's why we don't see any video shots of gigantic fields of tents with troops and gigantic formations of men in gas masks. We don't see that because they remember Vietnam, and they know the power of the press has to be controlled very tightly.
And right now the press is taking this hook, line, and sinker. You know, I don't see any questioning of this action. In fact, I don't know if you caught Nightline last night, Ted Koppel and Barbara Walters, who couldn't seem to figure out who was the host of the show, for one thing.
Yeah, it was incredible. They seem to be
spokespeople for the administration. That's how it got me. They were talking to this Iraqi ambassador and arguing with him as if they were spokespeople, and I think they sort of lost the sense of where they were. You know, they're journalists. They should be looking at all sides, not just defending the United States. I actually stood there and defended the United States' actions in Panama, saying, well, you can't compare that because we were liberating the country or something. And, you know, whether or not you believe that is one thing, but these are journalists. They're not supposed to be, just spouting forth with the administration rhetoric there.
Yeah, I mean, it was truly surreal. I could not believe that this was a real news show because here you had the mother figure,
browbeating
the ambassador, and Ted Koppel, the knight in shining armor, riding back from Baghdad, you know.
Just off the plane. It was funny.
It was, for me, totally surreal.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they're injecting adrenaline into the population. Everybody talks about the real factor right now is the hostages. And
well, they're not hostages. Don't call them hostages yet. You're not supposed to call them hostages yet.
Well, I mean, everyone knows darn well that's what they are.
Right,
and the question is, you know, are we going to let this thing happen the way it did when Carter was in office?
But let me just ask you a question here. Now, do you honestly expect that, you know, anybody to be surprised by, I mean, what would you do if your country was surrounded by a hostile force and you had citizens of that country in your country? I'd certainly use them as pawns in whatever way I could, of course.
What surprises me is the opinions that are being expressed on what to do. And one journalist from the Wall Street Journal who was being interviewed by on McNeil Lehrer, she said, I hate to say this, but I think we need to ignore the hostages. I mean, I'm quoting her verbatim on that. This was the Wall Street Journal's injection into the discourse about this,
mm-hmm.
which is that, you know, and the moderator says, you know, well, how can you just ignore, you know, a couple of thousand lives? And she says, well, what about the 200 million, you know, people over here? And so the point is, you know, we're doing all this so that we can drive around in our cars and have lousy mass transit and pollute our environment, you know.
Well, that's one of the underlying things, yes. One way of looking at it. Thanks so much for calling. I want to get some of these other calls.
Oh, thank you.
All right, 632-6901 is our telephone number. We've got two open lines, area code 516. Program is Brain Damage. We're on until midnight. Good evening.
Well, hi, Eric.
How you doing?
Hey, how's your vacation?
It was very nice, very thought-provoking.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad for you.
Thanks.
I was looking through the dictionary here about the term hostage.
Uh-huh.
And it says, a person held as a pledge that certain terms will be fulfilled.
Okay.
That's what it says in the dictionary.
All right. Well, I can think of quite a few people that meet that description. You think they're hostages?
Well, in my terms, hostage will mean anybody held against their will.
Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious that they've been hostages. Right, I think it's pretty obvious they've been hostages since this whole thing began, no question about that. And I think it's pretty obvious that it's a blockade of the shipping in the Gulf there.
Well, they had a couple of the so-called hostages that got back here, and they said that they weren't really treated bad, that they were fed and they weren't beaten or anything like that.
No, they're giving them free accommodations and everything like that. And it's kind of hard to, you know, hold hostage several thousand people. And that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about 50 people here. We're talking several thousand, and not just Americans either. But, folks, we're practically in a state of war here. And, that might thrill a few people. Hell, boy, we get to see a war. You know, this is how it really is. And it is kind of exciting watching the news every night and seeing just how bad things are going to get. But let's look at the other side of this. People you know are going to die. You know, they're going to die for no reason at all except to protect oil fields. And I think this whole thing can be worked out, you know, a lot simpler, you know, a lot more diplomatically. That's what the UN is for. And why are we moving so fast ahead of the UN?
Well, you know, I would say that if everybody sat down and talked a bit, that, you know, something might be agreed upon. But, you know, people got to get into war so fast, you know.
Uh-huh. Well, we have the chance to say something and say, wait, you know, we're the people here. So many people I know say, well, I don't know enough about the situation. And, yeah, look whose fault that is. You know, people don't pay attention to what's going on. Then when something like this happens, they don't know what's happening, so they just take the word of the people that that are running things. And you find yourself in situations you really don't want to be in. So, you know, read the papers. Get informed now more than ever, because there could be a whole lot of penalties if you don't, you know?
I got to tell you one thing. If we're sending troops over there, all right, you know, it's like a guy on TV, a Vietnam veteran, said, if we're going to do it, let's do it right. All right?
Oh, you mean?
We are sending more troops in now.
Let's win this time. Is that what he meant?
No, it's like just, let me put it this way. If we're going to send troops in there, let's not go around there and screw around, all right?
Uh-huh.
Enough troops in there, you're going to get in there, you're going to kick ass, all right?
Uh-huh.
You send just enough troops in there to look good, but not enough to really win the war.
Well, I think 250,000 would be sufficient. That's what they're planning for.
Well, you always have to have backup. See, you don't know what they're going to pull, you know?
Uh-huh.
He's got his chemical weapons, but you don't know if he's got something up his sleeve now, you know?
And it's also a very hostile environment, 120 degrees, and they're wearing all this equipment.
Well, those suits are only good for a certain amount of time before they decay in the sun.
Right.
And, you know, which means there's going to be, you have to have a lot of backup suits, because by the time they start decaying, it means that gas will be able to penetrate the fabric, which means the troops have to change them every, I think it was something like, I don't know, there was a certain amount of hours which I forgot.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, they're vulnerable when they're changing, you understand? And you don't know whether he's going to drop them bombs anytime. You know?
Right.
Our troops can end up being changing these suits, and he can drop a little mustard gas bomb right on top of us, you know?
Uh-huh. And he's gotten plenty of practice, you know, fighting with Iran. I'm sure he knows quite a few things we don't know.
Well, he's used them before, you know?
Right.
He hasn't hesitated to use them before. He's dropped more people. We know that.
But what I'm saying is, instead of seeing this as a confrontation, let's look upon it as a challenge. Let's figure out a way to get out of this. And, you know, maintain our integrity and, you know, get Kuwait back on the map. That would be nice. But, you know, fighting a war, I think that's what happens if you lose. You know, if you lose the battle, then you fight a war.
You know, but I understand what you're saying, because it's just the way things are working out, you know. I, more than anybody else, would love to see no war at all, you know. Everybody would like to see no war.
Uh-huh.
But things are just going to turn out. I think they might turn out for the worse, you know. Because the way it's been looking so far, that we're bringing troops over there, and
but look at the way it looks. The whole world is united here. The whole world says, you know, Iraq's actions suck. You know, they should not be doing this. Let's get them out of there. The whole world is united. I think we should use that and not do anything that could screw that up. And I think, you know, Saudi Arabia is very, very nervous right now. They don't like all of our troops being over there. And, you know, if they get upset at us and, you know, change their mind, well, it's not going to make any difference with us. We'll just stay anyway, because they can't really kick us out. But that's certainly going to change the rules of the game. And I think while we have this unity, while we have everybody saying, you know, yes, we've got to do something, let's make sure something gets done. But it doesn't have to be us doing everything, because people resent that. People resent, you know, you resent it if somebody comes in and organizes your life and tells you how to do things, even if they're right, even if they know exactly what they're talking about and if they know you better than you know yourself. But you have to let somebody, and you have to let a country have some independence, have some say in their own affairs. I think there's plenty of room here to be able to do that without necessarily starting some big, huge argument that's going to lead to many deaths.
Well, I think that he knows that he's greatly outnumbered, that not a whole lot of people really agree with him, and he knows that.
The man is smart. I mean, you have to say, he's not a madman. He is a smart person, and he just thinks in a very different way than us, and he's got, you know, completely different values. If you start calling him insane, you're going to lose a lot, because you're not going to believe some of the things he's capable of.
Well, you know, what I've always said is, never underestimate your opponent, right?
Of course.
You know, even if he looks as crazy as he is, in the position he's in, he's got to have a whole lot of potential, you know.
Uh-huh.
So he's got to know what he's doing. But another thing is, say if you were him, right? and you've seen a bunch of troops coming in, you know, 50,000, 60,000, however much it might be,
right,
coming in, you would see that as a threat.
Yeah, you've got
that's what he's seeing that as, and I'm afraid that he's going to decide to do something stupid like drop them chemical weapons.
Well, you've got to look at this from their perspective. Right, very good point. Look at all these troops, tens of thousands of troops dropping in next door. You know, you can't look upon that as just, well, these people are, you know, are concerned over my actions. You look upon that as a threat to your survival. And not only is Saddam saying that, but I'm sure most of the citizens in Iraq and probably quite a few citizens in all the other Arab countries that are supposedly on our side are saying, wait a minute, this is not right. The United States should not be here en masse like this. And if we don't see this now, we're going to see it later, and it's going to be very, very difficult for us.
Well, you know, what I can understand is his attack towards Saudi Arabia wasn't warranted. Saudi Arabia hadn't done nothing to him, you know?
Kuwait?
I mean, well, you know what I mean.
Well, actually, he had a conflict with Kuwait, saying that Kuwait had been stealing oil. And I believe we admitted that. We said that Kuwait was, in fact, cheating Iraq. And, you know, it's something that you have to look at. You don't necessarily have to agree with, but you could say, well, maybe this is how he reasoned this. And let's try to figure out a way to negotiate a settlement.
Well, there's two reasons why we're over there, I think.
Uh-huh.
Is number one is because we let our guard down and we got so independent on their oil. If we weren't so independent on them, there wouldn't be so much of a reason as us to send our troops over there. Understand now, if Saddam, whatever his name is,
uh-huh,
has that land, he's got control of 50% of our oil. And the world ain't going to be happy about that because, you know, a lot of things. You got to think cars, buses, motorcycles, anything. Machinery, generators to generate electricity, all run. Even winded turbines that they have in the fields to generate electricity all need oil. All right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things, more things that people realize need oil. And if 50% of that's gone, the prices go up, and then we're in trouble. That's number one. Number two is a so-called something called the domino effect, I think they called it, is because they think once he's already got one small country, he's going to want another one, and then another one, and another one. He's not going to want to stop. So then that's another theory, is nip it in the bud right now and stop it. Otherwise, you let him get one country, he's going to have another one, and it's just going to get carried away. Understand? It was what, like, Hitler was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Hitler would go and take one small country or a town and say, well, I want peace now. Then he'd take another one and say he wants peace. And he'd do that, and keep taking.
Right.
More states, more countries, small towns, one by one, and he's going to keep on doing that. That's another reason why we're sending troops over there, because if he gets started doing that, then it's going to be more of a pain in the ass then to stop him than it would right now.
Right. Well, I'm not saying let him get away with anything. I'm just saying the way we settle this should be not so hot-headed. I mean, sending 250,000 troops over there could be seen as more of a threat than what he was actually doing. And the whole thing just escalates much quicker that way, you see.
Well, he's got to understand from our point of view, too, that once he gets those fields, and I'm pretty sure he knows, he's going to have a pretty good, pretty tight hold on us.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows that, too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another reason that he knows that's why we're sending in troops here.
Right, but no matter how you look upon this, the fact remains none of that land belongs to us. You know, so whoever is in control does have us by the ball, so to say.
I think it's partly our fault for getting so dependent on that oil. If we had oil coming in from other spots.
Right, of course. You know, I'm not saying there should be offshore drilling without, you know, strict environmental controls, but it doesn't necessarily have to be oil, you know. There's all kinds of solar things we should have been looking into instead of saying, oh, yeah, that lies in the future. You know, it's coming back to haunt us now. Also, we should not be so wasteful, and we're incredibly wasteful still, even after the 70s and all that.
Yeah, because we're really doing, you know, people really aren't thinking about what they're doing, is even if you come out with these solar energy and stuff, the turbines that generate electricity, all have bearings in the oil, bearings in the grease. Hey, so many things come from oil, processed oil. You get your car oil, food oil. You got plastic chairs. Anything made from plastic comes from oil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You got, without any oil, your car would stop dead. The bearings would seize up on you, and that car is gone.
Uh-huh.
Right? That means oil prices, 50% of the oil is gone. Then prices are going to fly up, and they're going to screw us over. All right? you can't go out to buy the store for the oil. It's too damn expensive, all right?
Will they screw us over, or will they make life better for themselves?
They're going to do both. They're going to screw us over, and they're going to have a happy life while they're watching us squirm around in the ground, man.
But couldn't you look upon the way we are to them in the same way? You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. I mean, maybe they just want to, you know, get more for their money, which is what our economy is based upon that logic.
Well, I think, if we could have talked, it's partly our fault, too, that if we would have stopped and talked, we could have said, well, listen, instead of going into war and all this stuff here, let's sit down and talk. Maybe they stole oil from you, right? You say, hey, if they stole oil from you, maybe we can compensate you in some way of something that you don't have that we can give you, all right?
Just
to keep peace.
Right.
We can do that. That's our own fault.
I know. We have to give him room to back out of his corner because we've got him in a corner now. And what happens when you get somebody in a corner, they're going to strike out at you.
Yeah, it's just like a cornered animal. He's always going
to
fight.
But I'm worried because it's almost as if we want him to do that. You know, and I really don't like seeing that kind of attitude.
Well, I think partly, too, that the government wants us to, they want to fight so that they can make America look like the good guy in front of all the other countries across the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way, if we wipe him off the face of the earth, then not everybody's going to have the facts and know why he came over to fight us.
Well, you see, if we wipe him off the face of the earth, that's not going to solve the problem because his whole country supports him and somebody else will just come up and do the same thing.
Well, you know what they say.
We'll have an Iran situation then, you see.
One dead martyr is worth 10 prospering presidents, you know, or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. So, if we go over there, if you kill him, there's always going to be somebody else to take his place, you know?
Right.
It's just like the drug dealers on the street. You take one down, another one pops up. You know, you can't get rid of them. And if we go over there, I'd rather talk it out. If we go over there and we fight with him, we're going to have some of our troops going to get killed, casualties, which you can't, get away from. That's absolutely going to happen.
Right. The death toll is one so far. I'm going to report on this every week. So far, one person has died as a result of an accident, and no one has died as a result of conflict. But that's going to change very rapidly if we stay there.
If we go and we start fighting with him, war is a very tricky thing. You never know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
If you go fighting with him, what's to say that somebody else won't come up, Or maybe some other country that happens like him. Or, you don't have too many friends right now as it is, but you never know. Then some small country might see America as a big bully on the block pushing people around. And then they're going to get in. And
right.
You just don't want that to happen. Just try and get things peaceful. War's the last solution that you want. That's use war only if you've used all your other solutions up.
Well, you speak words of wisdom, sir, and I want to move to some other calls. Thanks very much for calling in.
Yeah, bye.
Okay. We have a full switchboard here, 632-6901. Good evening.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
I think there's one problem here. You have too much of an open mind. What happened with Hitler, he took over his first country, right?
Uh-huh.
And he said, okay, it's okay. Just like the last call said, he said this only for briefly. This is why I was calling. And, all right, we're going to be nice. But he's going to have us. Gas prices are, I was through the city. In the city, this is also a claim because of the taxes. That's another question I have is, why are New York's taxes as high? I went through the city and through New Jersey yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Gas was $1.59.
Well, I don't even want to get into what the oil companies are doing to us, because obviously they're taking advantage of the situation as well. That's not the first time they've done that.
Mm. But in New Jersey, I don't know what they're doing with their tax. Gas was $1.01.
$1.01, huh?
$1.01 for the same grade gas as was $1.59 in New York.
That's incredible. I didn't know anything about that.
Yeah, well, this kind of struck me, too, because it was a matter of getting home, so
guess
in New Jersey. But what Hitler did was he took over his first country, and he got everybody's, okay, we're going to make them happy. He put a Volkswagen in everybody's driveway. Then he took over another country, and they just kept spreading and spreading and spreading. Now, if he gets those oil fields, I don't understand. The Bush administration has been quite open about this. They have how many millions of barrels of oil? Do you have any idea in storage that hasn't been broken out yet?
Enough to keep the economy going for, I think, 10 months.
Yeah, but after that, what's going to happen? He's going to have us. Gas prices will at least double. We're talking about $2 if not more, maybe almost $3.
Right, okay, I admit he will have us, but the thing that everybody seems to be forgetting here is that the oil comes from over there, so of course it's natural to assume that they will have us because it's their oil. We should have thought of this, you know, years ago and planned some way around, you know, control by Arab countries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we shouldn't be dependent if, you know, we should not be dependent on other countries. But again, if they sell it at an unreasonable price, they won't be able to sell it, will they?
Oh, they will, though. Who is not going to buy it? Who can you think of one country that can go without driving? Nowadays, it happened.
Well, I can think of one country that can do with a lot less of it.
Right, a lot less of it or a cleaner way to do it, but we couldn't. How would you get to work every day?
Well, I could ride a bicycle, I suppose. I mean, we can do things. I'd rather have those kind of hardships and have to deal with people around me dying in a senseless war.
Right, exactly.
You know, and I think what the last caller said makes a lot of sense. You know, by all means, try to talk something out, and war is the last option.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, war is a failure. War indicates failure.
Right. Well, I don't know.
It's something. I mean, a lot of people are comparing him to Hitler. I don't know if all the if all the cards are in on that. You know.
Well, I don't think you're being careful enough because everybody's. This is exactly what I'm sure that went through everybody else's mind. Over there by Germany when he was doing this.
Yeah, but you see, we've been supporting this guy. Up until last year, we've been supporting him. So, you know, it makes me awfully suspicious of our motives if suddenly we say this guy is the next Hitler when we've been supplying him with, all kinds of advantages over Iran. And Ayatollah, he was supposed to be the next Hitler. Are all of our enemies, Gaddafi, are they all going to be the next Hitlers? You know, it makes you sort of not believe it anymore, you know?
Right, but the way the president's current administration has been working, when they had the recent hostage situation before this, I don't care what anybody says. I saw the front of the paper today. I was working all day, but I got a glance at it.
Mm-hmm.
I saw their help. I didn't get told. They were told to go somewhere. A few do on the front of Newsday.
Right.
That's what I read. Something to that effect.
Right.
Now, the last time this happened, he got them out of there as quick as he could. I don't think that he's not going to do anything because of these hostages. I agree with what you said as far as if you were in the same situation, you would hold them too. Anybody would.
But there's too many hostages, if we're going to use that word, to make them effective, you know, because you can't focus on any particular people. They're in a country of war now, a country that we're technically at war with, and that's, you know, the kind of thing that happens when you're in a country that we're at war with. So it's something we should take into account.
Right, but they didn't. It's I can't see it as acknowledgeable act because they are not their citizens. In the Newsday a few days ago, there was one guy who was working for I believe it was a soda company. He was over there. He was one of the nine that day that got out.
Uh-huh.
And he said that he was treated well, but if I was over there, I would not want to be there that long.
No,
I don't know how long
not.
The people were there, but. Certainly, you talk about 120-degree days, nobody's going to want to stay there.
Of course not, but you have to understand, I don't think the Iraqis are going to make it their priority to make sure these people get out safely. Also, if you look carefully at what they've been saying, they said the Americans over there will suffer along with the Iraqis. That sounds like a threat, but listen to what they're saying. They're saying, you know, anybody in this country is going to be suffering the same fate. It makes a lot of sense to me. If there's rationing, the Americans aren't going to be treated any better, are they? They're going to be suffering the same fate as the Iraqis. Seems like a very factual statement to me. I don't know if there's a threat in there. It wasn't a very good one.
If you got a close look at it, it said, we'll be held at key military locations and oil locations, which means he's afraid, he's getting scared right now, that we're going to bomb one or the other. It would be very stupid of Bush to bomb one of the oil refineries or anything over there because that would be committing suicide in a sense. But they're going to be held at military barracks also. So he wants to use them. I don't agree with you saying that. That's not going to be a key. I think I don't see many other ways of his way out of this. He doesn't want to talk. It doesn't seem like he wanted to talk much. But when he says we'll be held at key military and oil locations, that's kind of a threat. As you do anything, they're going to go with you. You know, they're going to go with us.
Uh-huh.
He knows that Bush is very careful about that because the American people don't want their people being, in a sense, terminated along with the rest of Iraq.
Right. Well, there's a lot of posturing going on here, and I think the Iraqis are making a lot of threats. But you know, What are they actually going to do? That's the question. I want to move on to some more calls. Thanks so much for calling
in. Hi, thanks.
In.
Coco Pee Pee says hi.
Okay, 632-6901. Good evening.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Hi.
How you doing?
How you doing? Hold on one second.
Go ahead.
All right, I'm back. I just had to do something.
Yeah.
What's the topic for tonight?
Okay, good evening.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
I haven't plunged into the depths in ages.
Yeah, you sound terrible tonight. Make it louder. Make your voice louder.
Is that better?
That's better.
I haven't plunged. What time is it? I got to adjust my clock.
It's 11:52.
11:52 already?
Yeah, you don't have much time, so get on with it. Come on.
I don't know what to say except you said something about, well, why isn't France jumping on the bandwagon? Well, for one thing, France doesn't have a bunch of anti-nuclear crybabies like this country and this station has.
You know, I knew this would serve as ammunition to get the nuclear program started again in this country. I'm convinced this is all a nightmare directed at me. First of all, I'm not even going to get into the nuclear question at all here. All right? Forget it. We don't have time. I'm not going to get into it.
Talk about that. But we deserve it. We deserve them. We got ourselves into this mess. We use too much oil, and that's it.
We certainly do use too much oil, but that's only part of the whole problem here. You know, just cutting back on oil is not going to solve anything at this point. I mean, we're going to have to do that one way or the other.
Here's your question.
Yeah.
If they're oil, let them charge what they want to charge. It's their oil.
Yeah.
Oh? I mean, I drive a van. I should suffer just as worse than anybody else. I could ride a bicycle to work. I can get rid of the car. I don't really need it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, everybody's crying.
Well, you know, that might be a good tactic there. Call his bluff. Say, okay, take all the oil you want, you know, charge whatever you want for it, and, you know, we'll survive no matter what you do.
His oil?
I think that would be a lot more effective.
Well, it's his oil.
At the same time, though, we shouldn't, you know, the whole world should not allow him to just invade country after country. And I think the United Nations is strong enough to prevent that. I hope they are. If not, what's their point?
I agree with that. However, I think the only reason we're jumping on a bandwagon so fast here is only because it has to do with oil. Otherwise, that we wouldn't be so fast to jump in.
You mean you don't think it has to do with the human rights of all those poor people in Arabian countries?
Why aren't we jumping so fast down in El Salvador and that? All of that's like covert.
That was a rhetorical question, but I see your point. I see your point.
Let some other people. You got not much time here, so let some other people get in.
Thanks for calling, and keep us updated as to your perspective.
What's the time now again? One more
it's
time.
It's 11:54 now.
Okay, thanks, Eric.
All right, good night. 632-6901. Good evening.
Hello.
Hi.
I think we've had enough problems with Iraq in the past that we should just blow them off the face of the earth.
How many problems have we had with them?
I don't know. I think we should kill all the Guidos also, including Cuso the Guido from Venom Disco.
All right, enough of that. Good evening.
Joe Corley.
Hey.
Crowley.
Crowley.
What's happening, man?
Hey, how you doing, man?
All right.
What's up with you?
Heard you had a good vacation?
I had a great vacation, yes. Very, very rewarding in many ways.
We missed you, pal.
What did I miss?
Actually, we just missed you. Like,
oh, you missed
brain
me.
Damage.
I thought you said I missed it. I was wondering
what
you
missed. Oh, we missed you.
Well, that's good, I guess.
Yeah.
So maybe I can charge more for myself now since I was a scarcer commodity.
Expanding our minds with a show like this. Seriously, I'm getting so many different opinions. I don't know what to think anymore.
Uh-huh. Well, are you prepared to serve your country?
No.
Is that why you're moving up north?
That's why I'm moving very far north.
Uh-huh. Well, don't be so sure that they're going to welcome you up there either, because, you know, this is something that the whole world seems to be getting involved in.
Yeah. So what do you think is really going
to
happen?
I don't know. You know, it worries me. It really does, because everybody seems so anxious for something bad to happen. Have you noticed that? Everyone really seems into this.
Yeah.
That's what worries me. I mean, yeah, it makes good ratings. It makes for exciting days and good discussions. And look, I got a full switchboard here. It makes for good talk shows. But you got to wonder, man, what are we really going to be in for? Let's try to think now while we have the chance, because you'll be amazed how quickly that chance will go away.
I think a Beatles reunion would be much more effective.
Yeah, well, that's not quite likely, is it, with one of them not being here anymore?
Well, I mean, the remaining members, maybe you get Julian.
I would hang up on you ordinarily for saying that. I hate people that say that. I really do. I
mean, I'm just kidding, man.
Yeah, but even in jest, it really gets me mad.
So let me ask you a personal question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Are you in chemistry or the union?
What? No, we're in the union tonight. Yes, they fumigated the whole union today, but...
Can you breathe in there?
I seem to be doing a good job of it so far.
All right.
Yeah, we'll see the effects of this in 10 years. I don't know.
Either way, I'm taking one of those gas masks off of one of those military guys and I'm moving in there.
Are you heading over here now?
I'm on the air at 2:30, pal.
Oh, you are? When are you going to be here? Because I've got a screaming Target record for you to check in.
All right. I'll be there at 1 o'clock.
Okay.
If I can come down from this... slamming some 40s.
From what?
I've been slamming 40s all night, so.
Well, that's great. you can talk about that later on, I guess. So you'll be on at 2:30.
Yeah.
Cool.
Later.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
632-6901. Good evening.
Yeah. Am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Oh, I just got one thing to say about the Iraqis. Forget about them. I want to hear the power.
The power surge. Coming up in 2 minutes. Good evening.
I don't mean to change the subject, but is it true that you met Flavor Flav?
You said that so fast that I could understand it, but it's the kind of thing I know I don't want to hear again. Good evening.
Yes, am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Do you know how to get the magic wand on Legend of Zelda?
Gosh, you know, that's something that we've been trying for a long time. I think it's just about time for us to stop for tonight. And what I'm going to do, as a special thank you to everybody out there for being so nice and to ensure that I don't have to bring this record in again next week, I'm going to play the final song from the Screaming Target record, the screaming dub version of Who Killed King Tubby. And then we'll be back again next week talking about what no doubt will be a further escalated situation. So everybody stay cool and try to think logically and reason things out and stay tuned for Power Surge because it may be your last chance to really let loose. Eric Corley for Brain Damage, WUSB Stony Brook. See you next week.
fire for a shot. String up the whole sound speaker.
Position of ascendancy over others. Surge, to rise and fall actively. Power, physical might, mental or moral vigor. Surge, a sweeping onward like a wave of the sea or emotion. Power, force or energy used to do work, the time rate at which work is done. Surge, a transient, sudden increase of current in an electrical system.